Support for this episode comes from T-Mobile. We're a lot more than just baseball fans. We're baseball fanatics. And thanks to T-Mobile, we can stay connected to the game we love with 5G in more places. T-Mobile is your ticket to the game. So whether you're home or away, you're never far from your favorite team with America's largest and fastest 5G network. Don't get caught looking. Switch to T-Mobile, the leader in 5G today. Fastest according to OpenSignal Awards based on average speeds in USA 5G Experience Report, April 2021. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Mets fans, welcome back to Amazing Avenue Audio, the show. My name is Brian. With me, as always, is Chris. And we last recorded at the end of the week that ends, I believe, on the 17th or 18th. And the Mets have played, depending how we're counting, 8 or 9 games since we last spoke. But that is not even the biggest news that we've had. This has been a crazy week of news. It involved a lot of injuries, a lot of roster moves, a very minor trade, and some more just general, you know, roster churn type stuff. But I have to ask you, Chris, you know, I think this is kind of the part of the year we have to start asking this every week. How are you feeling about the overall state of the Mets right now? I know they're still in first place. How confident are you in this team's direction going over the next week?
Feeling pretty good, and I think it's in part because they've managed to stay afloat. They've done more than stay afloat if you just kind of zoom out a little bit. Dropping 3 or 4 to the Nationals was not fun. The Nationals are a very annoying team.
Oh, yeah.
just perpetually. Even without Bryce Harper and Jonathan Papelbon being on the same team, which was a long time ago now, but like even without that, they're just... We know they're not very good. They've won 9 of the last 10, so they've moved up to second place in the division. And part, you know, 3 of those wins were against the Mets, and their only loss in their last 10 games was against the Mets. So they've had this little surge, and I don't know. There's just it's like, okay, go away. You know, it's like when the Marlins are good for a week or a month, and you know, like, look, this isn't who this team really is. You know,
I mean, I believe that's true. I think that they are just pesky, I guess is the word I would use. And, you know, on Sunday, Schwarber had like an all-time great day, right? 3 home run games are fun, and they don't happen all that often. And so, like, that guy had a day. But nobody else on that team had a performance that should have beat the Mets 3 out of 4.
Right.
You know, there was no, like, stunning debut of starting pitching or something like that. The Mets should have scored runs.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, so you zoom out a little bit, and that great stretch that they had against the Cubs and Padres is still very recent, and it's still part of an overall period here where they were mostly without a ton of guys, and you know, they will try to sort through all the injuries in the span of one podcast, all the new ones, but I think winning the series finale with Lindor, Conforto, McNeil all contributing, that just sort of felt like, okay, this is sort of what the Mets are supposed to look like. There's still a long way to go before they're 100% healthy, and you know, the way that things are going,
they may never get there.
Right. But across baseball, it's like injuries are way up, and a lot of these injuries have been relatively minor. Lucchese, obviously, is the major one. He's having Tommy John surgery today. So, you know, maybe we see him late next year or the year after. You know, late next year would be the very optimistic timeline on that. You know, we've seen how it played out with Zach Wheeler. We're seeing it play out with Syndergaard. You know, where you expect that the guy will come back, but the expectation they'll be back 13 months from now. I don't know. I don't think anybody has that anymore.
At least that's not the at least that isn't the like prevailing logic anymore. This still happens every now and then, but no one thinks like, oh, we'll see him back here in a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, look, they to have an off day in the middle of all this, they now have a ton of games coming up with no days off. It's probably the off day they need the most this year.
Yes.
At least up to this point, you know, I think we're going to be past the point that they have to play three doubleheaders in a week, but I don't know. You know, that could happen again sometime this year, but it is nice to see them in the position they're in, and to get, you know, it's, I think when you talk about guys coming back, Conforto and McNeil, just because they're only two names on a list that's very long, and you know, the pitching injuries with Lucchese, and then, you know, Stroman's thing seems very minor. You know, he's pretty much clear. They say he's day to day. Maybe he misses a start. So, like, the pitching injuries are kind of glaring because Syndergaard and Carrasco are not available to come back and sort of put together a great rotation in the face of all that. But Conforto and McNeil are like really good players, and they both got off to a pretty cold start and then got hurt. But these are dudes who like can and do make the All-Star team from time to time. You know, these aren't just like, oh, okay, you got your starting guy back. You know, even getting Guillorme back was a big upgrade, and I'm not putting him down, but you know, McNeil and Conforto are on a different level of major league player from him.
Yes. Yeah, it seems like, you know, offensively, the team is starting to put back together a lineup that is what you'd expect this Mets team to have, right? Yes, you'd rather have Nimmo there, and it looks like Nimmo's, you know, not far away. You'd rather have Davis there, and, you know, Davis, who knows when he's coming back. But VR has been a good Davis substitute, and Pilar has been a good Nimmo substitute. So I think that even if those two guys are further away than we think, the core of the team right now seems to be offensively what you kind of want going forward. You know, last night McCann hit a couple of doubles to right field. It was nice to see him use the full field. You know, Lindor had that nice, you know, laser beam of a home run. We've seen Alonso continue to hit, even though he's not been maybe as consistent as we'd hoped. Smith is struggling a little bit, but you put Conforto, you put McNeil back in this lineup, and all of a sudden you just begin to see, oh, there's not going to be an easy out in this lineup at all. You know, everyone's going to at least fight and be the kind of a player that you're not waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like Billy McKinney. I love Billy McKinney. You know, we were big fans of McKinney when he came over, and I'm not advocating the Mets cut Billy McKinney by any stretch, but every time you see McKinney get a hit, at least in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, okay, when is this hot streak going to end with him? Because I just don't think Billy McKinney is the Michael Conforto type player. You know, he's just not. And so it's nice to have players that you're not necessarily looking back and saying, oh man, I hope this can sustain another 2 weeks until so-and-so is back. It seems like the team is at a place now where there's enough offensive help that even if they need to use a bench player for a week or two or three, and that person is not necessarily producing at the highest possible level, it's not going to hamstring the team right now. And so
yeah,
that's really nice to have, just to have a team that's made up of not crossed fingers and wishes, right? But to have something that's like an actual team of professional baseball players who you know can produce at the highest level.
Yeah. Yeah, no. And I think one thing that'll be interesting is like, okay, Patrick Mazika he's going to catch a major league game at this point.
Yes.
And I don't know. I know, you know, the reports on his defense through his minor league career have not been great, but I don't know. It's just one of those things where that when you're in first place and playing well and, you know, winning games and all that, you can have a little more fun with like, all right, let's see how that goes.
Right.
You know, I listened to most of the game last night. How did McGill look? You know, it's another situation that you wouldn't expect to look forward to in February, but you got there and it was like, oh, this, okay, cool. Let's see what this guy's got, you know?
So I'm
just curious, how did he look? I know how he sounded.
I mean, he didn't look overpowering, but he never, even when he was pulled, he didn't necessarily look like he was floundering either. You know, sometimes you see somebody make their major league debut and your instant thought is like, oh shit, why wasn't this guy starting 2 weeks ago for us, right? But I didn't get that feeling from McGill, but I also did not get the sense that he was too far in over his head. I mean, look, Freddie Freeman had four hits last night, but Freddie Freeman did not hit this whole series. So, and Freddie Freeman did not hit a home run last night either. You know, he essentially made one real bad mistake, which was the home run he gave up. He gave up a couple of doubles to Austin Riley over the course of the game. But, I mean, he looked like a perfectly cromulent sixth starter. I don't know if I'd want him as my fifth starter for an extended period of time, although the Mets might very well be having to deal with that. You know, he seems like a perfectly cromulent sixth starter, spot starter type guy. And look, if he does what he did last night again and goes 5 1/3 instead of 4 1/3, maybe that conversation changes a little bit. But, you know, he looked okay. He didn't have a pitch that jumped off the screen at me. To be fair, I was also doing things like playing with my kids and doing some work during the games. I wasn't super dialed in to every pitch he was throwing, but he seemed like a capable back end quad A type guy, which I think is pretty much the highest ceiling that I expected from him. I mean, he wasn't even ranked on our prospect list, and I don't say that to throw shade at our prospect guys. I say that for the opposite reason. I don't think anybody really thought McGill was going to be an impactful player in the majors this year, but, you know, injuries do that to a team, and we've talked about this before, but the depth that this team built allowed Tylor McGill to debut at the end of June, whereas if this is under the past administration, listen to me sound like it's politics, the past front office, I feel like McGill might have had to have started at the end of April, the way that things went. You know, so the Mets bought a lot of depth, bought themselves a lot of time before needing to get to this level of depth. So even if McGill was not fantastic, I still think that when you look at all the people who have started this season, you know, Yamamoto is hurt, Carrasco never got started, Syndergaard has never got started, Lucchesi hit the IL. You know, the Mets have gone through a lot of players to get here, and I thought he handled himself admirably in that situation. So good for him.
Thanks to T-Mobile for supporting this episode and for keeping baseball fans around the country connected to the game. Because when you're on America's largest and fastest 5G network, you get more than great coverage. You get to stay close to your favorite team, whether you're at home or on the road. In other words, T-Mobile is your ticket to the game. Make the switch to T-Mobile, the leader in 5G today. Fastest according to Open Signal Awards based on average speeds and USA 5G experience report, April 2021. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Support for this episode comes from Locker Room, the app that's changing the way we talk sports. Locker Room is a sports fan's dream come true. It's a live audio platform that lets you connect with other fans, experts, and even the athletes themselves. Locker Room makes it easy to start your own conversations. Talk about the latest rumors, takes, news, and teams you care about most. Join massive watch parties for all of your friends to react together in real time as you celebrate a buzzer beater or suffer the agony of a crucial bricked free throw. And if you've got a bunch of supremely spicy takes you'd like to fire off, you're in luck. You can even record the conversations if you want and release them as a podcast. So it's time to start thinking about catchy titles. It's all totally free and available at the iOS App Store right now. So go download it today. Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports.
Let's quickly run down some of the other news that happened this week. I'm just going to rapid fire this. We'll stop and talk about a few things after I'm done. But The Mets traded Jacob Barnes to the Blue Jays. They got back Troy Miller. Albert Almora Jr. was activated after a long stint on the IL. Joey Lucchese tore his UCL and needs Tommy John surgery. He's getting it done today, as you mentioned before. Jared Eichhoff started for the Mets. They sent down Mason Williams. Robert Gazelman tore a lat. He's out for at least 6 to 8 weeks, probably longer. Jeff McNeil came back from the IL. Yency Diaz had a cup of coffee with the Mets when they placed Jairys Familia on the IL, which that is supposedly a short stint on the IL. Patrick Mazika was called up. As you mentioned, Brandon Drury was sent down. Marcus Stroman left Tuesday night's game with a hip injury, but his MRI came back fine, so he is day-to-day. We mentioned before that McGill obviously got called up. Along with him came Corey Oswalt. I feel like they used to say Oswalt, now they say Oswalt, who pitched like 2 1/3 scoreless innings last night. I don't know how that happened, but it did. Or not scoreless. I want to say heat. Sorry, 2 1/3 innings. He gave up a run, but regardless. Michael Conforto came off the IL. Tomas Nido went on the IL. And Sean Reed Foley was again sent down. That Sean Reed Foley roster churn is very real, and I don't know who they think is going to take his innings.
Yeah. It's I know some people might have doubts. I know he was a little less effective, in this particular stint, but it's definitely the guy where it's like, I mean, we talked about this with between him and Gazelman, and now Gazelman's hurt,
right?
Maybe for the season, but at least for 2 months. So
I guess Oswalt, maybe. Maybe.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. The Reed Foley had that disastrous outing. Against the Nationals, and despite bouncing back with a solid one, it's, okay, the dude has options, and we need people. I don't know. I don't necessarily think he's the savior for this bullpen and this pitching staff, but I don't know. I'm not going to write the guy off after one bad outing after he had done some pretty good work.
Right.
So I'm sure he'll be back soon. Now they have, how many guys did they have that have options that are in that spot of like, oh, we can, we can kind of churn them.
Drew Smith.
Yep. Who somehow has survived these things.
No disrespect to Drew Smith, but I don't know how he has survived this thus far. I think Oswalt signed a new deal, so he's out of options, correct?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So that's
that'll be interesting.
Because he was DFA'd at the end of last season, I believe.
Right. Yeah, no, he's a guy who I can't see him sticking on the major league roster all year, so he's a guy they're going to risk losing.
Right. I mean, Mazika has options. I'm just looking at the whole roster at this point. I don't even know who else does. Almora has options.
And if Nimmo is ready, he's the guy who I would send to Syracuse.
Yes, agreed.
Peraza has them. I don't know when they signed him as a free agent if he had some, stipulations in there about being able to opt out if he wasn't in the major leagues on certain dates, that kind of thing.
I think he's maybe late enough into the season for that not to be an issue.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be a good problem to have when they get there. But they have played with a four-man bench. Right now they have five. But on the pitching side, and you can use any part of the roster for these things. But,
right.
McGill, Peterson, although he's gotten back on track, so I don't suspect that he's going to see Syracuse anytime soon.
Agreed.
And then Smith. So yeah, it's you got three pitching slots there to play with, and then Almora's, you know, I'd consider, I don't know. It's nice to look at the roster and start to say, okay, I don't know who gets to stick around, or, you know, how they're going to make them fit. Because that means the Mets are getting healthier.
Right.
So, so yeah, we'll see. Jacob Barnes, again, no hard feelings there, but nice that they got somebody for him.
Yeah, I mean,
that felt like somebody who's going to get claimed just because that's how the Mets got him. You know, he's had that happen before. So just to get a minor league arm back, even if it's not anything significant for a reliever who had an ERA of what, 6?
Something like that, yes.
That's nice to see. Best of luck. Hope he figures it out. You know, whatever the Mets saw that they thought they could fix or improve upon, obviously that did not happen.
Right. Just a couple of things I think are worth talking about for a minute. Joey Lucchese seemed to have figured it out in the last couple of starts, or at least figured something out in the last couple of starts. And it's a real shame that he's winding up on the IL. I think we were all rooting for Lucchese. I think he's an interesting arm to have in the system. I liked, you know, I'm a sucker for the Churv, but I also think that it's going to be really weird to see him, or it's going to be strange to see how they hold on to him, because I can't imagine there would be anything close to a like a sure spot for him anywhere on the roster when he comes back. How many options do we know? How many options Lucchese has left?
Well, let's see. I mean, he still has 2, so you know there is a path. Obviously, he'll be on the major league injured list throughout.
Right.
As long as they retain him. So they, you know, they can send him to Syracuse when he's done with his rehab assignment.
Okay. If that's good to know. Ready. Yeah. Okay. All right.
But still, it's, you know, that whole the offseason 40-man roster rules with guys who are legitimately not going to pitch when that season starts, the fact that they have to count against it is kind of silly to me.
It is.
I have no idea if that's even on the agenda for the Players Association, but maybe it will be. Maybe that'll change in the new CBA. we talk about it like it's a thing that will definitely exist, and it might not.
Right, exactly.
But it would be nice to see that change, because it's just, there are some major baseball surgeries that you know that team is going to have to spend a whole offseason being, you know, shorthanded on its roster in some way, and then they can make up for it once the season starts. That just doesn't make sense. You know, it's one thing if teams were going to abuse it and try to, you know, have a 50-man roster and they get into spring training and then make more cuts and all that. You know, that's obviously not ideal, but there are a few surgeries that, like, oh yeah, that player had that surgery, that qualifies where he does not count.
Right. Right. But yeah, so, you know, it's a shame about Lucchese. I think we can all breathe a sigh of relief. We did not know how DeGrom was going to be when last recorded, and, you know, he pitched 5 stellar innings on Monday. It seems like next time out, maybe he'll pitch longer than that. They're obviously being very, very careful with him. And that's totally logical, and I'm cool with all of that. It's good to see Stroman's injury was not serious, because that was a very scary moment as well. I mean, we're going to spend a future episode talking about pitching options, whether it's via trade or internal options in the future. But, you know, for right now, unfortunately, it looks like we're going to be part of the Jared Eichhoff experience for a while. And he looked fine the other night, you know, and look, if you can get a couple, if you can squeeze a couple of starts out of Eichhoff and McGill, and not rush back Stroman, and not, you know, and just not totally flounder, I guess you do that, right? I mean, right now, are you with? I know if you ask some folks on our staff, they would be trading for any live arm possible right now. But are you in Panic City yet, or are you still hanging out in the slightly concerned suburbs?
Yeah, I guess the latter. I mean, okay. I do think they need to trade for an arm or two, and it doesn't have to be the best. You know, doesn't have to be the best reliever. Doesn't have to be the best starter. But, yeah, this is sort of where the bullpen has still outperformed our expectations, and they've gotten best case outcomes from several pitchers who we were maybe uncertain of. But this was still something they could have addressed better over the offseason. They could have come into the year with a better reliever than Jacob Barnes, or just somebody else other than Robert Gsellman, just so they could have that depth. You know, Gsellman contributed at the major league level, so that, you know, that worked out rather nicely before he got hurt. But, you know, they could have had him start the year in Syracuse and, you know, be one of the guys who comes up and goes back, that, you know, the Sean Reed Foley Express. Mm-hmm. I'm dating myself thinking of the
Heath Bell Expressway. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's just a minor annoyance. You know, I know it's definitely hindsight after spending 2.5-3 months saying, hey, look, the bullpen's better than we gave them credit for. So I don't know if it's totally fair to go back and be like, oh, see, the bullpen, that's a problem. But when you get to this point that a couple of the guys who were in that opening double bullpen are now no longer in the organization or out for a while, and now guys who could have been that 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th man in that bullpen mix, instead they were, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8. And now we're getting a different caliber of you know, of replacement. So yeah, I don't know who exactly the player is, but you know, obviously you're thinking expiring contract, bad team, and just capable arm. And if they could get one or two of those, that would be nice.
Yes, agreed.
But so, they can probably stay afloat if they don't. But, you know, there's an opportunity here where they still have a large lead in the division. And if they were willing to do that sooner, because the trade deadline's not that far away.
No, Gary keeps saying on the broadcast that, you know, if you try for a trade this early, you're going to get fleeced because you sort of seem desperate. And while I think there is some truth to that, I also think that the days of the Carlos Beltran for Zach Wheeler trades just don't happen anymore at the deadline. And so I don't think that you have to worry so much about these blockbusters that are going to happen. I mean, can you think of the last time there was like a gigantic trade at the deadline where major players were exchanged on both sides? Maybe Cespedes for the Mets? And Fulmer was a prospect at that point, so he wasn't even like a necessarily a super known quantity at that point. When was the last
right.
like, huge deadline blockbuster trade the Mets made?
Yeah, that might have been it.
And I think I got Jay Bruce a year later.
Right, but that
but you know, I honestly can't recall who they even traded for Jay Bruce.
Was that the time that Dilson Herrera was involved, or? The Dilson Herrera story has had several stints with the Mets.
Yes, I believe so that Jay might Bruce's. Have been. Wasn't that Dilson Herrera? Because wasn't the whole idea that they traded John Buck for Dilson Herrera and then Herrera for Bruce? Am I making all that up?
No, you're not. We'll have to revisit that. we'll do an episode all about John Buck, Dilson Herrera, there was a pitcher, Vic Black
was involved in that too. Yes, yeah. And I want to say, didn't that all start with oh man, who was the oh god, I can picture him in my head, beefy outfielder who had a comeback season with the Mets in the mid teens. Oh my goodness.
What, Marlon Byrd?
Marlon Byrd, yes. Didn't Marlon Byrd have a wasn't that part of it too?
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, the tangled webs we weave. We'll have to tap Rob Wolf to do like an unformidable about that entire trade tree or whatever we're calling it.
Yes. But anyway, Jay Bruce.
Yes, my point is that I don't know if the Mets need to be worried about. I don't think they're going to be able to make a gigantic move. I don't think they're getting Scherzer, is what I'm saying. And even if they did get Scherzer, I don't know what the Nationals would expect for Scherzer at this point.
Right.
So, yes, we'll talk more about this as the trade deadline looms a little bit closer. But for now, Chris, what is your music pick for this week?
Oh, well, it's sort of a callback to last week in concept. You know, you had mentioned bands that exist for a short period of time and never have a chance, you know, like make a couple great records and never have a chance to screw that up.
Right.
So I had the very relevant Mission to Burma pick on the fly last week to fit with that. But also sort of linked to that is a band that that I think put out some of its best work in its latter phase. And I still hope, although I'm realistic here, I'm not too hopeful. But it would be nice to see Sonic Youth play some shows again. I know those interpersonal relationships might be permanently broken, and I know that might not happen. But goddamn, they were good to see live, and the records that they made in the 2000s I think were really strong, and Rather Ripped is one that I've been going back to a little bit recently. Just really good. There's a couple songs on there, you know, it's funny, you look at like you look on Spotify at these things and like one song, Incinerate, which is a good song, has 24 million plays and like only one other song on the record has one, or no, sorry, two others have 1 million.
That so just, must have been like on a soundtrack or something, or a playlist that Spotify made that went big for some reason.
Yeah. So yeah, that is a good song. Pink Steam is probably actually my favorite song on it. It's just shy of 7 minutes, and mostly instrumental, and the lyrics kick in late, which is sort of just unorthodox for any rock song. And, you know, I like it a lot. So, yeah, it's good. I don't know if I would say it's the best of those last few records, but it's the one that I'm recommending right now. So, Rather Ripped came out in 2006. I think I got to see them on the tour they did for that at Webster Hall. So they played a bunch of it. And, you know, obviously I was very happy to be able to see that. So, yeah, check that out.
All those albums kind of Rather Ripped, Sonic Nurse, and the last one's called, I think, The Eternal, something like that. Like, all three of those kind of run together in my head. When I think about them, I think they all sound a little bit similar. Not that they're like clones of each other, but that there was sort of a late period Sonic Youth sound.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
All right, so my album this week is a classic album. It is 21 years old now. It's an album that I think at the time was considered like a crazy huge achievement. And then the next album this band released was kind of overshadowed it, even though I think this is the better record. And that is Stankonia by Outkast.
Nice. Yes.
Stankonia is like an amazing, amazing album, but I think that a lot of people just go to Speakerbox to Love Below because of Hey Ya and The Way You Move, which are both great songs. I love both those records too. I am not dissing those, but I feel like Stankonia is just, I mean, to me it is like, this is the Southern hip hop album, like, of all time. Any Southern hip hop album should be ranked against this one. There's just so many bangers on this. I mean, we could just talk about Bombs Over Baghdad, VOB, and I could talk about it for an hour about that song, because I just think that is one of the best hip-hop singles of all time, and it's totally unlike any other. Oh, Chris, you there?
Yeah, Skype is doing its thing. I lost you for a second, but
okay.
I agree with whatever you said, because I love that record.
Well, let me back up a little bit. What I was going to say is, you know, I could spend like an hour just talking about Bombs Over Baghdad, B.O.B., because I think that's one of the most unique hip-hop singles of all time. It's a song, like, there is a hook to it, but usually with a successful hip-hop song, there are like lyrics that you can quote back, you can kind of rap along to it when you're listening in the car. And like, I don't know about you, Chris, I can't keep up with them on that song. You know, it's like, it's a totally unusual single, but it's such a crazy song. And I have that song on a playlist that I play around the house sometimes. And yesterday the playlist was on, and when the song started, my son, who's 5, got up and just started like fucking wailing, dancing, just like throwing his body all over the room, going crazy to that song.
Yeah.
And I feel like that is the sign of a truly transcendent song, when a 5-year-old can get up and just lose his shit to it. And that's just one of many great songs on Stankonia. My one thing I will say about Stankonia, which I will say about most hip-hop of the era, is just too many skits and interludes. No one needs.
Yeah, those. I think the one Outkast one that needs to stick, I think it was on Aquemini, was the one with the guy saying, "They say a computer can do my job better than I can." Like that.
Yes.
That one that always stands out. But yeah, no. You know, and like, Stankonia has a song on it that is an ode to toilet paper going down the toilet, and it's good. Like, that's insane.
Yes.
You know, like, how? It's pretty.
Yeah. Just for the record, there are 8 interludes on Stankonia, so yeah, that's just too many. But
yeah, but yeah, no, it's and you know, I love, you know, I love the use of electric guitar, like, in a good hip hop song. So Gasoline Dreams has that, with just, you know, and like, you listen, there's a lot of them out there. You know, it might not be the first thing that comes to mind, but like, you know, when we talked to Curtis Granderson, and he's still super in like his, you know, West Coast hip hop phase and all that, and he used to come up to a guitar riff from a Dr. Dre song, you know.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this record's got some of that too, and always love it.
I feel like it's a record that if you're somebody who does not consider themselves necessarily a hip hop fan, I think there's enough diversity in the type of music on this record that you can find something for you. Like, Spaghetti Junction sounds totally different than Miss Jackson, which sounds totally different than Bombs Over Baghdad, which sounds totally different than Gangsta Shit, which sounds totally different than Stankonia. Like, there's so many different styles on this record that it's really a joy to listen to. And if you don't know this album, what's wrong with you? You've had 21 years to listen to Stankonia. Go listen to Stankonia. Anyway, thank you, Skype, for only fucking up for a second. Thank you all for listening. We appreciate that. And, you know, please go to AmazingAvenue.com. We have lots of good stuff going on right there. If I can pimp my own stuff, we have an LR of the day up when you hear this. 3 non-Jonathan or Kevins this week. So lots of weird things I had to pull out of my ass to cover for those days. But we also have, you know, game recaps, news, other great podcasts. Check it all out at AmazingAvenue.com. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. Our podcasts are on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get podcasts. Spotcher's a new app coming at you in 2022. Get in on the ground floor of that now. Please rate, review, and subscribe to that stuff. He's on Twitter at Chris McShane. I'm on Twitter at Brian Needs an App. And until next time, let's go Mets.